Girl, you wanna come to my hotel? Baby, I will leave you my room key. I'm feeling the way you carry yourself, girl. And I wanna get with you cause you's a cutie.
Hello and welcome to What the Faux Travel Podcast. This is a mini episode about accommodation.
Hi guys, thanks for joining us for our first mini episode of Series 3. We're going to be talking about accommodation, all the different types of accommodation when you're travelling, and we are joined by hostel expert Catherine Johnson. Hello.
Hello.
Hi Catherine. So you're with us now because you actually got in touch with us and you sent us an email, and it was something along the lines of, oh my god, I love your show so much, I want to be involved.
She's not American, but cool. Loving the impression so far. So let's get to know you a little bit. So where have you traveled in the world?
Okay. It's a long-ish list. I actually counted the other day for my Instagram, 34 countries. My main travelling's been actually in the States. I've been to 27 US states, love it. Visited 14 times, lived there for 2.5 years. So that's my big kind of travel investment. But I've also done Southeast Asia, been to New Zealand, a lot of Europe. I just recently worked 6 weeks in Mexico, Canada. So, yeah.
Okay, and yeah, so what's your experience with like accommodation, hostels in particular? So why do you know so much about them?
I have stayed in well over 100 hostels all over the world. My dad actually managed youth hostels, YHAs, when I was younger. So I grew up, every time we went on family holidays, we'd go to YHAs. When I was 13, we went to Alton Towers and I was like, yeah, man, we're going to stay in the Alton Towers Hotel. It's going to be so cool. My mum was like, yeah, we've booked you and your friends into the YHA. I was like, Mum, that's so not cool. So my whole childhood was staying in youth hostels around the UK, and then that made it a lot easier for me at about 18 when I started travelling to stay in hostels and all around the world. So yeah, definitely done my time.
And you've actually worked, am I right in thinking you've run a hostel, and where was that?
Yeah, I've managed a hostel in New Orleans. I did that for the past year. I've also volunteered at a hostel in Mexico, that was in San Cristobal, and Oxford in England.
Very nice. So yeah, you really are a hostel expert.
Yeah, that's me.
Which is why we've got you on the show. So the way that we're going to set this episode out is we've got four types of accommodation to talk about. So hotels, couch surfing, Airbnb and hostels, of course. And so we're going to go through them, and some of you may have seen that on social media a few weeks ago. We asked you, what's your favourite type of accommodation and is there a place around the world that you want to recommend to other people? So we're going to be going through our social media as well and talking about all your comments and everything. So make sure that you stay on top of our social media because we're going to be asking a lot of stuff like that throughout this series so you can get involved in What the Faux. So let's start with hotels first. I wanted to start with, I guess, the more traditional one. Really?
Yeah, for sure. There's no need to explain what they are. Everyone knows.
Okay, so I did a bit of a history lesson this morning on myself, and I went through the internet. What I found was the history of hotels is obviously connected to civilizations, because as long as we've had communities, we've had people, therefore hospitality and hotels. Facilities offering guests hospitality have been in evidence since early biblical times, so all we need to do is think about Jesus when he went to the inn, didn't he?
Or the barn.
Yeah. The Greeks developed thermal baths in villages designed for rest and recuperation, which I was really surprised when going through all of this research that thermal baths had such a strong connection to hotels. But after that, the Romans built mansions to provide accommodation for travellers on government business, which is still a thing that happens today. Everybody travels for business. The Romans were also the first to develop thermal baths in England, Switzerland and the Middle East. And later still, a resting place for caravans appeared along Middle Eastern routes. So that's how they came into it. And then lastly, in the Middle Ages, monasteries and abbeys were the first establishments to offer refuge to travellers on a regular basis. So if you think about inns, hospices, like we said before, and even hospitals, people used to say hospitals, which is a bit crazy. So yeah, that was a bit of history behind the hotels. Now, a hotel somewhere that you stay regularly, or is it kind of your least frequent one?
Definitely not. Hotels are a treat. So, you know, you've got that special weekend you want to celebrate, or there's some sort of birthday or something. That's when I've gone hotels, and that's usually more high end. Let's really spend £200 a night, really have a nice kind of jacuzzi, blah, blah, blah sort of experience. That's when I've done hotels. I've very, very rarely stayed in a hotel for more of a convenience reasons, definitely not.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. It is a treat. I mean, of course, if you find a nice hotel, of course, there are bad hotels out there. The thing is, they're just so popular, they're easy to book. I mean, we normally use something like booking.com, and it's kind of annoyingly easy, and you can compare them by price and whatever. I've actually got a bad experience at booking.com. They can actually cancel it on the day with like no explanation, and then you're screwed because all the other hotels are booked up. So I'm actually not a big fan of them, but their website is annoyingly easy to use. But I find with hotels, yeah, they're probably, well, they are really, they're the most expensive. They should be the most comfortable if you're paying that money, and they normally are very comfortable. But I find hotels just so soulless and boring. And like, your room might be very comfortable, but you've got a bed, you might have a little chair, sofa, you've got a TV, you know, you've got a bathroom. But then like, when you're there, you're like, what do we do now? I find hotels, yeah, they have a purpose, but boring, soulless. That's my opinion.
Yeah, no, and I would actually agree with you there, Nick, because, for example, we just got back from South America. The only time we stayed in a hotel was when I was ill. And again, we will actually go through this story a little bit later, but we walked out, for the first time in our lives, we walked out of a hostel because it was just that terrible.
Oh, God.
And yeah, so that's a story for later. But the most convenient thing was to find this hotel, and it was actually the cheapest, I think, wasn't it, in terms of what we needed. I just needed somewhere comfortable to be because I was ill.
I think that's the thing. Like you say, it is comfortable. It is private. And so in a way, the privacy is a plus when you need that privacy, when you're going for a romantic weekend, when you're not looking to meet other people. But on the flip side of that, dependent on what kind of trip you're on, what sort of travel you're trying to do, if you're trying to meet people, going down to the lobby and talking to someone at the bar, bit weird. Someone might get the wrong end yeah. of the stick. Oh, who's this girl sitting at the bar chatting me up? What's this? Is she, you know, it's definitely not the social environment that you might be looking for. So I think it's got its pros, but if you're looking to meet people, that's not the place to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's hear from some of you listeners. On Instagram, the No Pants Life said, if I'm doing a short stay in a large city like New York, I'm all about hotel tonight. Otherwise, I take advantage of the business traveller function on Airbnb to find apartments with a business-friendly setup. So you've been in America quite a lot. Do you know what Hotel Tonight is? Because I've never
heard of that.
No.
No, I've actually done a little bit of research because I thought that was actually a hotel. But it's one of them compare websites like booking.com.
Oh, right. Okay.
And then Two Tenderfoot Tourists, I believe they've actually got a travel podcast as well, these guys. They said, so on the topic of hotels, they said the White House Hotel in Biloxi, Mississippi. They said it has a rich southern history and in-hotel gourmet food and bar, plus a view of the Gulf of Mexico. So, you know, they obviously like saying hotels, but they've actually given us a recommendation. So the White House Hotel in Mississippi.
Oh, and also there's Lifetime Travel Mates who spoke to us on Facebook. They said, we've been using mostly booking.com and Couchsurfing. Airbnb is too expensive in Southeast Asia. As a couple, we find some cheap private rooms in hostels and guest houses if we have the chance. We also like Couchsurfing, not only for saving money, but for the added value of being with a local who can share some tips and info about the place. So yeah, they prefer to go with booking.com. Although maybe not after what we've said.
Maybe not, but they're just demonstrating, yeah, they're open to all sorts. But it's true, there's a time and a place for all of them, and we're going to talk about the other forms of accommodation now.
Yeah, so Airbnb, it was actually founded in 2008, which I found quite surprising. And their mission is to create a world where people can belong when they travel by being connected to local cultures and having unique travel experiences. Its community provides access to millions of unique accommodations, so you can stay in places from apartments to villas to castles and treehouses. They have lots of weird and wonderful things on there. In more than 65,000 cities and 191 countries, Airbnb say that they're the easiest way to earn a little extra income from extra space in the home. So yeah, not only is it a place for you to stay, you can also make money out of it, Airbnb, which is definitely a pro to it.
For sure. So yeah, Catherine, what are your experiences, if any, with Airbnb?
I'm a massive Airbnb fan.
Good, okay.
I actually, speaking of the history of it, shout out to another really awesome podcast. Have you ever heard of How I Built This?
Oh, I think I might have actually.
Guy Raz. It's NPR Radio. It's basically about aspiring, it's about entrepreneurs who have made it. So Airbnb, Instagram. There was just the girl of the day, Soap and Glory, like some really big brands out there, how they actually got to being as successful as they are. And they did about Airbnb and just how these guys spotted this gap in the market, like you say, making money, getting people into cities that sometimes are packed out for events. That's kind of what it started with. There was a conference, I think, somewhere in Austin, Texas, and they had a shortage of rooms, and that's where Airbnb sprung up from. So that's really interesting. If you really want to know more about Airbnb,
yeah, definitely.
You can definitely find that out on that podcast. But yeah, really like Airbnb. But I'm more of a fan of staying with people. So you can do Airbnb in two ways. You can either rent out an entire property. So that's yours privately. They give you the keys. It's your place. You probably won't have too much interaction with the person that owns it. Or you can do a shared room thing, which I've never actually done. So I'd say a more common second option is that you can have a room in someone's house. So you'll take their spare room. You'll probably meet them. I mean, I've been lucky enough to go and do stuff for people. They'll cook for you. They'll make you breakfast. They're going to give you personal recommendations about things you can do in the city that you're staying in. And so you're getting that kind of local aspect, which a lot of travelers like to have. You're seeing where local people live, how they decorate their houses. You know, you're chatting to them. You're getting the recommendations. So for me, that's more where it's at. I have done a little bit of the private stuff, but mainly I've done the staying in someone's house, getting to know them and spending time with locals.
Okay, so my question is, because we've used Airbnb quite a lot as well, but we have mainly done the private stuff and we have stayed in people's houses, but we've never gone out and done things with them, i.e. like you said, cooking for you or going out. So at what point, and does it vary with different people, do you think, like, if they're going out with you, do you think, oh, do I have to pay for them? And like almost pay them for their time. Like, how does that work?
I think you can sort of tell with Airbnb, people that don't know anything about it, there's reviews. As a user, you're going to get reviewed by the people who you stay with. And you're also going to review the people whose home you stay in. So you get a bit of information about the people that you're dealing with. So the one that I really sticks out in my mind was a couple, a young couple in Atlanta, Georgia in the States. And their review said, oh, they're really interactive. They gave us a lot of tips. They cooked for us. We hung out with them. And I thought, that's what I'm looking for. So for me, I already knew from the outset that they probably were going to be like that. When I got there, they gave me tips. Oh, you should come out with us. We're going to go to this event tonight. Cool. Great. That sounds awesome. And that was part of the appeal for me. If it had said, oh, this couple, they left us to our own devices, that wasn't what I was looking for. So by going through those reviews, I actually picked out a couple that I wanted to stay with. I thought, you know what? I'm going to have this really authentic experience in Atlanta. I really want to meet these people in this cute little southern house. She emailed me saying things like, y'all, I'm so excited to meet you. I was like, oh my God, I'm all over this. That sounds amazing. So yeah, I think that's how I knew what to expect. And then I wasn't too worried about the formalities behind paying for this, that and the other. It was much more like a bunch of friends than that.
Yeah, that's a good tip. So yeah, go through, you know, really read those reviews to tell what type of person they are and what type of experience you're going to have. But yeah, Airbnb can be good because I think that's the website where you can find some of the most unique accommodation, like you said, like tree houses and all sorts. Like, there's some cool stuff, and we stayed in a really nice Riyadh in Morocco, and that was through Airbnb. So I'm not like a massive Airbnb fan, but we've used it. There's a time and a place for it, and we have found some good places. Plus, you get to stay somewhere, normally pretty comfortable, and it's cheaper than a hotel. So it's a good, cheap option for a bit of privacy, and like you said, to experience a bit of local life.
Jennifer Blears on Instagram said, I love Airbnb because it makes me feel like I'm a local, like I live there, and it makes me feel so at home. I loved my Airbnbs in Barcelona as I really felt like a local. It feels more relaxing to me when I can come and go as I please and have no one tending on my every need. So yeah, I guess that's kind of maybe it is a negative to hostels and hotels.
That sounds like a hotel reference.
Yeah, like when you arrive back and there's always people there.
How was your day? Blah, blah, blah. Yeah. You just don't want any of that. Yeah.
Which, you know, a lot of English people especially will be like, leave me alone. I've had a stressful
tired.
Day.
Yeah.
I just
I'm lying
go into
down
my
now.
Room. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And of course, the good things, you know, about hotels and hostels we'll talk about later that Airbnb doesn't have is kind of like a 24-hour reception, you know, where you can go to for information and help. You've only got your host, and if they're not in, what do you do? But that's, you know, there's pros and cons to it. Anyway, carrying on, Indigo Traveller, aka Nick, he commented on Instagram. He said, hey guys, my answer is Airbnb hands down. Nothing compares to that genuine feeling you get in a real human's house. The small things, you get to stay in a local's house in any country you want to. What better way to experience the culture firsthand? Which, he's got a point.
Yeah, like, that's pretty much what we've said, isn't it?
I wouldn't feel comfortable having a conversation about Airbnb without pointing out that there are some cities that are really against Airbnb. So living in New Orleans, there was a lot of neighbourhoods you could walk around and they've got a lot of signs saying, you know, we're done with having our neighbours being tourists. Like, we're all about neighbourhoods and knowing your community and not having it broken up by tourists. So the history for that in New Orleans is obviously they had Hurricane Katrina. Lots of people moved out of the city. The city was in a pretty bad spot. And so a lot of people with money came in. They always say the Texans. That's probably, I don't know where that comes from. The Texans came in and they bought up property and they've done it up and they've sold it on and they're renting it out for Airbnb. But actually, if you think about it, it makes sense. Like, you've got a, these are small little pockets around New Orleans. Each neighborhood is a small pocket. And actually, you can walk down a street and four or five of those houses down that street will be Airbnb. And if it's Airbnb private, that means that you're constantly living next door to a tourist that's changing every week. That is breaking down the sense of community within that neighbourhood. If you're doing the staying in someone's spare room, I think that's a bit different. But there are some cities that are really backlashing against it. They're protesting against it. They don't want it in their neighbourhoods. They're making quite open statements. They're kind of protesting against it.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting.
So moving on back to the listeners' suggestions, Andrea Reyes, she got in touch. She was telling us Airbnb again, that's her preferred way to travel and stay in places for the reasons we've spoken about before. She also gave a good tip. She said she finds it really useful when you use your credit card to book on sites like Expedia. And if you sign up and become a member, you get points every time you book accommodation. So, and in the points that she's been able to redeem, you know, she gets free nights stay in some 3 or 4 star hotels. So, yeah, it's a good tip.
Yeah, no, really nice. I didn't actually know about that. I know you can get points for flights and stuff like that, but I know we never really think we should spend some time one day of just going through that sort of stuff because we travel a lot. We could get so much back, I think, but we just don't.
I think that way about flights. Like, honestly, the amount of points I should have accrued by now, but it just, I don't understand it, so I just don't do it. And,
yeah, it just all seems a bit complicated.
Yeah,
exactly. And I don't really want to get into it now because I guess I don't really care that much. But yeah, I've never understood air miles. What? Mm-hmm. What is that?
Maybe we should make it. Well, we should get an air miles expert in and talk about that.
There you go.
Also on Instagram, Where They Travelled got in touch. They said, we love Airbnb for weekends away. And if we want private time as a couple, that's actually a really good point to make as well. Obviously, hostels is quite hard. If you've got like a dorm room or something, it is really hard to be as a couple. So hotels and Airbnb are quite good for couples. They say they're great if you're looking for private access to the kitchen and bathroom too. But we also love the community feel of hostels. Nashville Downtown Hostel was incredible for that, right in front of the river too. The best hotel we ever stayed in was Sarana Bungalows in Kopanyang. Beachfront huts for only £4 a night. Could not recommend enough. That sounds great. £4 a night.
Southeast Asia. Final person to get in touch about Airbnb was Sarah Laplante. She said the great thing about Airbnb is that it allows you to stay in parts of the city that you wouldn't be able to stay in otherwise. My boyfriend and I got an Airbnb in Edinburgh in Scotland. We were located on the Royal Mile in the Old Town, right at the base of the castle and right above the famous Victoria Street. And they said, you know, they felt like locals, but they had comfort as well. So, yeah, I mean, people have made a good argument for Airbnb. It's not one of my personal faves, but I can see the appeal. Right, should we move on to your specialty, Catherine?
Yes.
We're going to talk about hostels now, and Amy's going to give us another little history lesson.
Yeah, normally you're the one that gives the history, but I'm doing it today. Do you know where hostels started? Let's see how much of an expert she is.
I know it's definitely Europe.
Yes, that's correct.
And I'm almost sure it's not the UK.
No, it's not.
But I can't think where it is. I've definitely read this, but I can't think where it is.
Okay, so the idea of the youth hostel belongs to one legendary man called Richard Sherman. He's a German school teacher who felt that there was a need for overnight accommodation for his students so that they could see new things and have new experiences outside the classroom. Sounds like a pretty good teacher to me. Sherman went on to found the German Youth Hostel Association in the year 1919, so quite a long time ago. And by this time, the idea of youth hostels had spread all across Europe and further. The original idea of the youth hostel, and I want to see if this is what we think it is nowadays, the idea behind it is that young people who are on nature trips to get economical accommodation in exchange for money and a helping hand with domestic chores. These hostels were said to build character and give a sense of independence, as the youth who stayed in them got the chance to see how other people lived as well as pitch in to do work. So is that what we think hostels do? Do they give us a sense of independence? Do they make us grow up?
Oh, definitely. I think that for young first-time travellers, you know, 16, 17, 18, however old it is when you first get up the balls to go out and travel around the world, I think that is the most perfect way to do it. I think it is a built-in community where you get to go and meet people. You've got a lot of, well, hopefully if it's a good hostel, you get a lot of advice, you get some help, you get people that want to come and join in. Oh, I'm going here today. Oh, cool, me too, let's go together. Oh, where's your next destination after this? Oh, me too, shall we go together? So you get this kind of environment of people that want to hang out with you, that want to help you, want to support you, make you feel, when you come in after that long day, you walk to the door and you feel like you're at home. To me, that is the one thing the hostel has over any other accommodation. It is home. It helps you kind of crack the sort of travelling nut, I think, hosteling.
For sure. I've never experienced in any other form of accommodation, yeah, a sense of community. You're right. And the way I think about it, if you are in a dorm, so people that don't know, hostels are a cheap place to sleep because you really are just paying for a bed. You're not paying for a private room. Most of the time you're sharing a room with maybe, you know, like 12, 13 other people, something like that. So you've got to think about it as just a place to sleep, because the communal areas like the bar can be so much fun. That's the place to hang out. Of course, when you're not out exploring, you're not really going to be hanging out in your room because there's nothing to do there. There's just a bunk bed. But it's a cheap place to stay. It does mean, of course, you have to put up with people coming back at all different times of the night and turning the light on and things like that. But you get a cheap place to sleep. But I do like hostels. We've stayed in some great ones who do all sorts of fun things. There's one in Australia who organised like a chili eating challenge, ended up with a guy passing out and he fell face first and they had to get the ambulance. And then the guy organising the competition was like, tournament is over. So like in the end, there were no winners.
Because the prize, only on the second chili as well, weren't they?
The prize was to win like a £100 tab at the bar. But in the end, no one won.
One guy ruined it for everyone.
Exactly.
Hostels are great. I really, really do like them. Of course, there are some bad ones. There are also some great ones. Favourite one of ours, Copenhagen, Generator Hostel.
I've stayed there.
Still, I mean, it's expensive, but that's only because Copenhagen is expensive. But such a cool place. There were hammocks to chill out. The bar area was amazing.
Yeah, I think that's the thing that I like about hostels is that they're really creative with their decor. So, yeah, you'll find places where there's loads of hammocks and it's got more of a hippie vibe, and it's definitely for younger travellers, I would say. And so many times I've been talking to my friends and they're saying they're going somewhere, but they might not go because they don't have enough money and stuff. And I'm like, okay, well, why don't you, rather than going to that expensive hotel, why don't you try a hostel? But I think I really don't like the word hostel. It gives a negative connotation to it. And everybody thinks, oh, God, like, only poor and homeless
soup
people
kitchens
stay there.
Yeah, exactly.
But the amount of times I've had to explain that is not what it is. Like, and also I'm like, is that where you think I would stay here? In a homeless shelter? Okay, nice to know you think that of me. But yeah, like I really love the decor of it, and like you're both saying, the sense of community is like without a doubt the best to meet other travellers, not necessarily locals.
Yeah,
but yeah, to meet other travellers. And for anyone else, if you haven't stayed in a hostel and you know what it's like to go to boarding school, I just wanted to say for anyone out there, like, because I went to boarding school, it's the same thing. It is literally the same. You're there with a bunch of your mates, and because people think that boarding school is like this scary place, but it's not. It's like a sleepover with 40 of your friends. And yeah, I just thought of that while you guys were talking. I thought that's quite a good connection if anyone's a bit worried about trying them, but they went boarding school. Basically, you posh people out there.
We're not all as privileged as you.
But yeah.
But also hostels, they can arrange like tours of the city or the place wherever you are. Yeah, like I said, with the chili eating contest, special nights. There's always people at reception. You can ask for help and advice. So really, really cool. Catherine, what about some of your favourite hostels around the world? Any spring to mind?
I've got to obviously shout out my hostel, the one that I managed in New Orleans. It's called Auberge Nola, and actually just won the second time number one hostel in the USA, number two in North America.
Congratulations.
As voted for, thank you, by Hostel World.
Very nice. So what's the name of it again?
Auberge Nola.
What is... So
New Orleans has a French and Spanish history. They're the people that founded the city. That's kind of its roots and heritage. And auberge means hostel in French. Oh. So actually, it's called Hostel.
Nice, okay.
So that's where the name comes from. But like you were saying, Nick, they organise every single night at Auberge, we do events. So it's basically a bar crawl. Starts with a pre-game, get the beers in, we do lots of kind of games and stuff, getting people to know each other, getting the party started, beer pong, stuff like that. And then we take them out to music events. New Orleans is big on music, just to go drinking on bar crawls, etc. And actually, I think that's almost one of the best things about hostel, because in the day, you know, you can sightsee on your own, like that's actually not so bad. But do you want to go drinking on your own? Maybe a bit unsafe, maybe a bit unsocial. And that's the great thing, I think, about a hostel, is that you have that kind of fun aspect, the community again, as we're saying. And especially somewhere like New Orleans, it's a party city and you can't party alone. And the hostel totally allows you to do that. We were so big on helping our guests. When they would check in, we'd give them a map, show them what to do in the city, tell them all the things. You couldn't shut me up on the subject of what to do in New Orleans. I loved it. I lived for it. You know, that was that was my passion. It was helping the people that walk through our door have the best possible time. I was in love with that city, and there's no way you're going to leave my hostel without being in love with it too.
Yeah.
You know, and that for me is what we did. I know not every hostel does that. And that's the thing about hostels. They're independent. They're inconsistent. But the good hostels are amazing, and I think that's the kind of thing they provide. They really, I think, add to your experience.
And something I want to point out, which I don't think we mentioned yet, you can actually get a private room in a hostel.
Oh, yeah.
In a lot of hostels, maybe most.
And I think that's growing. Like, in the industry, it is growing. That people are aware that that's what more and more people are wanting. So most hostels, you'll definitely be able to find a couple of private rooms are available. So if you're a couple traveling, you don't have to be like, oh, we're a couple now. Like you were saying earlier, actually, it's the same price for me to get a hotel room as it is to two bunks or a private room, but you still want that community side of things. You still want to meet people. We had so many couples in our hostel, so many that just wanted to party, really, really enjoyed that side of things.
And I'm glad you brought that up, because it is a really good point, Nick, that there are private rooms, because I think we're a perfect example of this, that we're a married couple, so we obviously want to spend time privately together, but but also, yeah, like, we are a sociable couple. We would never want to be away from all the fun and all the travellers. So, yeah, that kind of is a perfect solution to it all.
Amy, how many times a week do you want to spend time privately together?
Do you know what? There's plenty of people that don't need a private room to spend time unprivately together, I can tell you that much.
Yeah, working in a hostel, I'm sure you've
seen it all.
Yeah. And weirdly, I was watching a documentary last night about stags and stuff in Prague, and one of the interviews was with the hotels and people, and they were telling some pretty amazing stories about men who had got rid of things that need to come out of their body. And
that's a strange way to put it.
Well, I didn't. Peeing. No, I mean the other thing.
Oh, no, I know.
But basically, it landed on the ceiling.
Oh, God.
That's impressive.
I know. I genuinely don't know how that happened.
Well, you see those programs with the blue light thing where it just they go around the room and it's everywhere.
It shows you the semen.
That's what you were trying to say earlier.
That's it.
So quickly, Kathy, tell us some good stories. Come on. Especially New Orleans, like you said, party place. A lot must have happened there.
Oh, God, the things I could tell you. Funny. I have a lot of amazingly positive stories about people making great friends and going off and travelling together, and lots of people falling in love, and lots of people having... Literally, the people would leave our hostel going, this has been the most amazing experience I've ever had. This is the first... Especially being in America. Hostels aren't big in America, and so we'd have a lot of Americans. This is the first time I ever stayed in a hostel, and it was amazing. Thank you so much. That was so great for me, because I thought, this is awesome. We've opened their world to hosteling, and I hope from here on out they're going to go and stay at more hostels, etc., and go and embrace that a lot more. But yeah, if you want to get laid, going to a party hostel is probably a good way to do it. But you know what, we used to play so many games. Everyone would get drunk, you know, your tongue gets a bit looser, and we'd play lots of kind of uncomfortable question games and things like Never Have I Ever. You know the game?
Yeah.
You say something you've never
would
done
you
and
rather?
You drink if you... Exactly.
Yeah.
I definitely would say, being an expert in drunk young people these days, that threesomes are becoming very common. That is really
a big thing.
That's
not a reason to go to hostels.
Yeah.
I don't know
so
what
if
is.
You want to get outside your box.
and there'll probably be an audience as well. If you're sharing a room with 12 other people.
Yeah.
You know what? We have CCTV in our hostel in New Orleans, and the screens are in the house, so in our kitchen. So you're cooking some dinner, turn around, I have definitely seen various people having sex on camera in what they think is, you know, the common room. I mean, the cameras are very obvious, but they're just going for it and you think, oh my God.
Great.
Okay.
I mean, great.
that's good. So before we move on to some more comments from listeners, I just want to say another good hostel I remembered, The Yellow in Rome. Mm. I don't know if you've heard about it or stayed there, but one of the best hostels by far I've stayed in. It was fantastic. Very clean, in a cool area. They had an event going on every single night. The bar was really, really good, reasonable price drinks, and I just loved it. It was a really cool place.
And the one thing about The Yellow that I liked, that I think a lot of hostels are catching on to and doing themselves, is rather than paying for your room for the night, you can exchange it for entertainment. So if you play a guitar or you can sing or anything like that, you can offer your services, and that can grant you, if you do like a set for the night, that grants you your night free.
And of course, you can volunteer at a hostel, like making beds or putting breakfast out in the morning in exchange for a free bed.
Yes, all of our staff in New Orleans were volunteers. I don't know if people have ever heard of the website Workaway. We recruited basically all of our volunteers through that. Sometimes people would come through and stay on longer, but that was great. And that's a little bit more of getting to see the local side of things. So our volunteers would stay for 6 weeks. So you get to have the hostel side of stuff, but also you're living in the city that you're volunteering in. So you're able to go out there, do the local stuff, get to know the city more intimately. You're there for 6 weeks. Sometimes they require 2 months. That's what I did in San Cristobal in Mexico. Puerto Vieja, I would give that a shout out as an amazing... Also, that's probably terrible butchering of Spanish. I'm sorry. It means old door. That's an amazing hostel. And I made beds there. It was actually very nice to go from the stress of managing a hostel in New Orleans to literally just making beds. No responsibility. I don't care what's going on. I'm just making the beds and then staying for free. So that's definitely a really awesome way to get to know somewhere.
Yeah, nice. And that is something I think we want to do. We haven't done it yet, which I feel like we should have. But I have got one more story about the hostel that I said earlier that we walked out. And I will tell you that. But just first, on Instagram, Ashley Clarics said, hostels are my favourite. Great way to meet people. But Airbnb is great for meeting locals and to get an insight into what it's really like to live there.
And Ryan Sanim, he said he'd prefer hostels. Again, it's a great way to meet people, especially for travelling alone. He has used hotels and couchsurfing and Airbnb as well. And of course, you know, there are pros and cons to all, like we've said quite a few times. But yeah, hostels are his favourite.
JM Weeds on Instagram also said overstay in Bangkok. So he didn't specify whether it was a hostel or whatever. So I looked it up. And you know when you look something up on Google and it suggests what you're about to type?
Yeah.
So I put overstay Bangkoking, and the next thing it said was has been raided. So I'm not sure how great this one is. So it is a hostel. He said it's far from pretty or clean, but the atmosphere and the staff are amazing. It's good to chill, good to party, good to drink, good to do balloons. And the staff are a mixture of locals and expats. Just bloody lovely. He said, and it's the cheapest place on booking.com for Bangkok, or it was in August 2017. So sounds like great advice if that's the sort of thing that you want to look for. But yeah, be careful of the raids.
And Wandering Lucy said hostels are her favourite, or the odd hut on the beach. And that's a good shout. We didn't think of a beach hut, did we? But she says she usually doesn't book in advance. She just turns up and sees what's around when she gets there, which is a relaxed way of travelling. I like to know where we're going. I freak out a bit if somewhere's not booked. But of course, people with hostels just turn up and say, do you have a spare room? Because if the hostel doesn't, they might say, oh, we don't. But this one down the road probably does.
And that's exactly what Kimberly Trippin was saying on Instagram as well. She said, I'm still a hostel girl, as I enjoy the social aspect. I confess I'm pretty bad at pre-booking, depending on where I am in the world, and I really prefer to turn up with a no-cash commitment. But if I know the place is busy or there's not many accommodation touts arriving early or late and there is somewhere I really want to stay, then I book it in advance. So, yeah, like we said, if you don't really know somewhere, you can just get there and book everything through the hostel. They're great.
Pocket Trailblazer, aka Charlie Keeps, said, I'm always going to be a hostel girl, as I just love the travel community and the excitement of you never know who you're going to meet next. I look at Hostel World for reviews and then book on booking.com, as there is no deposit and free cancellation options. That's a good tip. Maybe cheating the system a bit, but yeah, looking at Hostel World and then booking it on booking.com.
Very nice. And lastly, Sasha said that Destination Hostel in Lisbon is one of my favourites. So amazing.
Lisbon actually has like the best hostels in the world.
Oh, really?
If you're a geek like me and really kind of take this stuff seriously, you can go on Hostel World and they'll tell you the best hostels in the world, like I was saying. Irish Nola, number one in the USA.
There you go.
But yeah, Lisbon has like some of the top five in the world. Like there's something about Portugal. I don't know. Someone was telling me that they have different kind of like rules about what hostels have to have and do, etc. But the standard of hosteling is much higher. Beautiful quality, great breakfast, clean, secure. I know you were mentioning earlier that you don't like the offering in London. Actually, the UK has really poor offering generally. Like it's much lower than a lot of European countries. I worked or volunteered at a hostel in Oxford, which I just loathed. I did it for a month and I had to leave. I just couldn't, because I'm so passionate about hosteling, I couldn't work at somewhere that didn't care as much as they didn't care. And I do think, not exclusively, but a lot of British hostels are like that. They're not very good. They've got very kind of stagnant, the money's coming in, there's not enough competition, so we'll just keep doing this, people will keep coming. Backpackers don't complain. Why should they? They're paying nothing for their beds, so they're not going to make enough of a fuss. And for me, I love the UK, I'm a proud Brit, and I'm sad that people potentially are coming in to our country, visiting our cities, and not getting the best possible experience, because these people out there that are running hostels just don't care enough.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And on the subject of bad hostels, like I've been promising this story, it's not really going to live up to it now, is it? We're in Paraguay and we were in the capital city, Asunción. Yeah, so we went to this hostel and it sounded really cool. So you know how I said everyone has like different decor and stuff. So it was an old paper factory. And well, old being the big word there. So we arrived and it was kind of like down this back street, cool, whatever. Like, yeah, it's all a bit kooky. And then the guy said, oh, do you have a booking tonight? Yes. So he was like, oh, first we'll drop your bags and then I'll show you around. Great, great service. And he started to take us around and it was obviously a working paper factory. Again, I still don't mind too much, but paper factories, any factory, is a very messy place. A very dusty, loud, everything. So we're walking through and I cannot explain how, even though it was a working factory, it seemed abandoned. It had not been cleaned since it opened. We went into our bedroom and as cougars, I like these places, it's not acceptable to have cobwebs everywhere.
Yeah.
Like I didn't even want to put my bag on the floor because there was so much dust, obviously from the paper. And it was just so bad. And I went to the toilet while you were in the room, I think you were. And I actually didn't want to go to the toilet. The toilet was that dirty. I didn't even want to walk in there and go to the toilet. And I came back to the room and this was the point where I was ill, you know, earlier when I said we stayed in a hotel. The hotel was where we went after because I was so ill. And we got into our room and it was a 6-bed dorm. There was only one other guy in there. And I must have looked so rude to him because I just laid on the bed and I was like, I'm so ill. I don't want to be here anymore.
Yeah.
So we walked out and actually here's a little bit of audio of us walking out.
One of the scariest things I've ever had to do.
So yeah, that was the sounds of us walking out petrified that the manager's going to see us walk off. But I just want to say that you don't have to stay somewhere. And if you really don't feel comfortable somewhere, I think it's always important to say, you know, try and get your money back or just say, this is not acceptable. And although in the mood that I was, I didn't want to say it to his face. I was just not in the mood to have that conversation. So we left and tried to get our money back online. And I think we could do a same day cancellation, couldn't we?
Yeah, but it just meant we lost like 10% our deposit.
And that's because the deposit on Hostelworld, for anyone that wants to know the inside gen on all this, that's actually Hostelworld's fee. They say they don't charge fees. They do that money that goes to Hostelworld is Hostelworld's money. So the hostel, you're not paying that partly to the hostel and then paying the rest. That's a commission. So, yeah, I suppose it's a commission that the hostel is paying and therefore not a fee, but the guest is paying that. So that's why you'll probably virtually never see that back because that's a booking fee, essentially.
Okay, that makes sense. But then, yeah, we went off to our hotel and I think we needed that because, again, because I was just so ill.
I think when you aren't feeling ill like that, you know, sometimes you need things to be right. You need to feel clean. You need to just feel like, I really definitely agree with the fact you want a private room in that scenario.
Yeah, absolutely.
You want to be shitty and you don't want everyone else to see it. You're not in a good mood and you don't want to seem like the bitch in the corner. Totally get it. Hostel life sometimes doesn't allow you to be a moody bitch.
Yeah, no, it doesn't. And it was a bit awkward though, because we had to connect to their Wi-Fi to book another place. So we were, and then we couldn't get the code and it wasn't working. So we were having a full-on conversation with the manager, knowing full well we were about to grab our bags and run away.
The guy was like, "So are you ready to make the full payment?" And we're like, "Can we just have the Wi-Fi first? Oh yeah, I need the Wi-Fi to get on my internet banking." And then got on the Wi-Fi, booked somewhere else, and we were out of there. Should we now move on? So next, let's move on to our fourth and final accommodation type, I suppose, couch surfing.
Yes, so I'm going to outright say this is definitely my favourite. And yeah, I just love it from both sides, being a host and being a traveller. So again, did some of my research, didn't I? And couchsurfing began in 2004, so 4 years before Airbnb. So it started as a small passion project by founders Casey Fenton, Daniel Hoffer, Sebastian Letuan, and Leonardo Bassini de Silveira. It started from an email to a group of students in Iceland, which gave birth to the idea that people around the world could share their homes with strangers, or as couchsurfing like to call them, friends you haven't met yet. They have couch surfing hosts in 200,000 cities, 12 million members on the site, and 550,000 events. So not only can you stay and host on couch surfing, you can also hold events. So language exchanges, dance classes, hikes, dinners, anything that you're into, there will be a person on couch surfing that's into the same thing. So have you tried couch surfing,
Corinne? No, I haven't. I'm so not the expert on this. Luckily, okay. I know you guys, like you said, you've done it and hosted it, so you're the ones to talk about it. I would say, though, the reason I've never couch surfed is fear. I would say 90% of the travel I've ever done has been solo female travel. And for that reason, I've just avoided it, which I think's hilarious that I will happily pay Airbnb to stay in someone's spare room, where who knows who they are. You know, they've got some good reviews. How hard is it to make a few good reviews up?
Yeah, exactly.
I will happily, as long as there's money involved, I'm like, oh yes, it's great, I'm definitely gonna do that. But will I do the same thing for free couch surfing? Like, I realize the irony in that, but for some reason I've not got the balls up to do it. And I, after this, will definitely give it a go, but that's probably why.
We haven't even tried to convince you yet. Is everybody saying you're going?
Well, yeah, I wanted to hear, even if you haven't done it, I wanted to hear, you know, your reasons why, and I understand your reasons why. Now, I'm going to be honest, and this is what I say to everyone. Couchsurfing is dodgy. Like, it's not. It sounds weird. It sounds so weird. And when we try to explain it to people who haven't done it, they're just like, what? You let people stay in your house for free, or what, you go and stay around a stranger's house? This is the weirdest thing ever. We've given up telling friends and family that we have couch surfers over, because they don't get it. But I can understand why they don't get it, because it does sound so dodgy. But when you do it, it all just makes sense, doesn't it? Like, especially when you're traveling. As a traveler, having somewhere to stay for free, obviously, it means you could like double the length of your trip just on the money you're saving. And you have a place which is comfortable. When we were going around South America, this is our first time couch surfing, and South America is not great for hostels. Obviously, you've been talking about North America. I think Mexico is technically including
North America.
Yeah. There's not great accommodation in South America, or maybe value for money, which is why couch surfing was fantastic, because we have a comfortable place to stay. We have an actual working shower with warm water, and the people we met through couch surfing, they made our trip. And the whole pretty much 7 weeks we were going around South America, very rarely did we bump into another tourist, only when we had to stay in a hostel because we couldn't find a couch surfing host. We weren't staying with tourists, we were staying with locals the whole time. We saw stuff that tourists are never going to see, and it really made our whole experience so much better. But it works similar to Airbnb, where you have a review, or you give someone a review when you stay with them, they give you a review. And what I like about on your profile is you've got a map of the world, and each country you either stay in or have someone stay with you, if they're from a certain country, it colours the map in.
Oh, I'm all about the map and
I love a map. But yeah, you build up references. And tip for people, when you are couch surfing, it's going to be almost impossible if you're travelling, but you have no references yourself, if you want to stay with people, try hosting first, get a few references under your belt, and then go that way. It's sometimes a bit frustrating because people don't get back to you very often. you have to send a lot of requests out to get one back.
Yeah, I've heard that.
But for me, again, we said earlier, Airbnb has a place. It's got good things about it. But for me, couchsurfing is just a much cooler version of Airbnb because there's no money involved.
And I think the most common question I get is, couchsurfing, does that mean you have to stay on their couch? No, it doesn't. It has a great filter feature on the website and the app, which we use all the time. So our personal filters, and you can change them to whatever suits you. We always filter for a private room because we're a couple, and that they have to have references. And also there's three categories for hosts. So you can have accepting guests, maybe accepting guests or not accepting guests. So then you just make sure that you've got the ones that you want on. But honestly, it's literally the same as Airbnb when it's not private. You know, when you get to spend, how you were saying earlier, you get to spend time with them, they'll cook you a meal. Or like the amount of times that we cooked an English meal for people in South America to show them our culture. And it's kind of like they get to travel at the same time, even though they're in their own home. And I cannot recommend it enough. And like you said, we met the most amazing people. We were just with local people all the time. And we tried amazing things. Like in Brazil, we got to go to carnival practice because our guy used to play in, you know, the shakers, the that instrument.
And what we found amazing, bearing in mind we're staying in these people's houses for free, like we'd offer to take them out for meals and drinks. And of course, sometimes we did to say thank you. But we found most of the time they were like, no, I'll get the drinks. And we're thinking, hold on, we're staying at your place for free and you want to take us out for food and drinks. Just the generosity of people is amazing. But the way couchsurfers see it is they say, yeah, don't worry about it. I'll get the food and drinks now. When we're back in your country, you do the same for me. And that is just a big community where there is a free place to stay anywhere in the world. And it's really cool, but I do admit it sounds weird.
I think it's really good that you said the reason you haven't tried it is because of fear, because so many people say that and everybody has the same feelings. But I think that fear comes from the lack of money, like you were saying. So with money, you're like, oh, okay, so that host is getting something out of it. They're getting cash, so you understand why they're doing it. But it sounds really weird. Why would someone have someone stay in their house for free? What are they getting out of it? But honestly, as a host, we get so much out of it. So last weekend, we had a Japanese woman and her French boyfriend come to stay. We learned so much about Japan. We learned so much about France that we didn't know, even though it's our next door neighbour. And yeah, I cannot recommend it enough.
We have to say, with all these different forms of accommodation, if that makes sense, there are pros and cons. I mean, not everyone is going to have a great couchsurfing experience. Of course, you never know, but just like Airbnb, you never know whose house you could stay in. You could have a bad experience. We've been lucky that we haven't so far. And of course, when you're not paying for anything, you can't really complain if it's crap standard. You know, if someone's flat is really messy or you are sleeping on the sofa, whatever, when you're not paying anything, you don't have a leg to stand on to complain. So, but then when it is free, I don't really care, really, because no matter how bad it is, we kept thinking to ourselves, but it's free, so who cares?
But also, and I appreciate this would be quite awkward, but you can always leave.
Yeah.
That's the thing. And the Couchsurfing have a really good section on their website about safety. And yeah, we haven't ever had a bad experience, but something that did come to mind was this Christmas when we were away in South America, you can put up public trips as well, and you can say, for example, we're going to be in Brazil for 2 to 3 weeks along these dates. Is there anyone that wants to host me? Any cool things that you want to do? And I'll make my way to you. So we did that. But it was because of Christmas, because we were thinking, let's do something cool for Christmas. And we got this request from a man who said he owned a farm because, you know, gauchos are quite a big thing out there. The cowboys. And this was in Argentina, sorry. And so the gauchos are quite big over there. And so it's really common for people to have farms. And he said, I've got a farm. I'm thinking to invite a load of couch surfers over for Christmas Day. We'll cook barbecue. And it just sounded brilliant. It just sounded too good to be true. But the thing that I found quite sketchy, I started talking to him. And the first thing he wanted to do was add me on Facebook. And he wanted to move the conversation off of couch surfing. And I know through my job at work that a lot of scams work like that. They, and you know, things that happen online, they always try to move you off the app if something's up. So I was like, okay, right, let's suss this out a little bit. Started talking to him a bit more. And I said to Nick, because you offer requests and accept requests. So I said, okay, we spoke about it and was like, yeah, okay, we'll come. I'll send you a request on couchsurfing. And he made a joke and he was like, oh, don't do that. You know, that sounds too formal. We're friends now. And he was kind of talking to me in a really weird way. And I said to Nick, I'm really not comfortable with this. I don't like the way that he wants to steer off of couchsurfing. It's almost like we don't have any legal way or track record. So I said, I'm not happy with this. So I told him as well, and I said, I'm going to be honest with you. I don't feel very safe because you've now said that. And he said, oh, okay, give me the request then. It's fine, don't worry about it. And I said, no, I've made my decision now. I don't actually feel safe coming to you. I'm really sorry. I hope you have a good Christmas, whatever. And then he started to get quite aggressive and was being quite rude. Yeah, and I completely feel like we made the right decision. But, you know, it's all about sussing people out. And just make sure you stay on the app when you're talking to them. Once you've stayed with them, like, don't get me wrong, we're WhatsApping people that we've stayed with and all of that's fine. But if they don't want to do the formal request, then I'm just say, be careful. But that's probably the only thing that we've experienced, and nothing went wrong, and we just looked after ourselves, really.
For sure. So, yeah, it definitely sounds like something you want to try, Catherine, yeah?
Oh, yeah. I'm actually quite jealous. No, I mean, I think I've had similar experiences, Airbnb, but, you know, I've worked in the States, made friends, got to go to their houses, spent Thanksgiving with them. You know, I have had that kind of local experience, but I've never... Don't know what's stopping me, but no, from now on, I'm going to give, I don't know where or when, but I'm going to do it.
So just to hear from a few more listeners, on Instagram, Tom Goes Where said, couchsurfing is the ultimate win, in my opinion, especially when long-term travelling. Not only budget-friendly, for obvious reasons, but it's great to connect with locals. Usually get loads of tips and recommendations for the local area. We have never had a bad couchsurfing experience.
Very good. And moving on to Surf Memphis Pod. So these guys actually make a podcast all about couchsurfing. So obviously they're couchsurfing fans. They said, we love couchsurfing. It's an amazing way to really immerse yourself in the local community and see the place you are traveling through the eyes of the people who live there. It's a way to make lifelong friends all over the world. We've hosted over 50 people traveling here in Memphis and loved our experience so much we started a podcast about it.
And the Bottomless Pit podcast, another podcast, said, couchsurfing is def my preferred method of finding accommodation. You never have the same experience twice and you get to see a side of the town that you wouldn't otherwise get. However, if no hosts are available, then I use hostels over Airbnb and hotels in order to meet other travellers. Oh, and I also just want to add, with couchsurfing, you know, I said that we had the Japanese and French guys staying at our house the other day. We actually had the most British day we've ever had in our lives. So we kind of learned more about our own culture because we picked them up from the train station and then we went to Tiptree Jam, which is really famous in Essex, and it's all afternoon tea. So we had some tea and scones and then we went for a roast dinner after. So we kind of had a foodie day and it was really great. And yeah, I just felt really British.
Yeah, at the end of the day, I thought, I love England.
So true. But yeah, so that's couch surfing. So I want to wrap up by talking to you, Catherine, about... So you've said that you want to open your own hostel.
Yeah, so from all of the fantastic hostels that I've stayed and worked in and then some of the less so good ones, I've got a really, really clear idea in my mind what I want to open. And I'm just so passionate about it. I just love the fact that hostels allow people to explore and travel, and it's just... easy, I think. And it's just this community, like I've said before, of people that are really excited and passionate about it and they want to kind of join in together and have this great time. So that's just something I've been passionate about for years. And finally, I've got to the point that I'm like, yeah, I can do this and I know I can do it well. So I'm excited to do it. So that's it now. I'm just kind of pumped up and fired. I'm going to go to Australia in the next year, look around there, see if that's something I might want to do. But I'm looking at either opening in Australia or in the US. So okay, escaping the grey skies of the UK, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, this is what I wanted to ask, because earlier how I was saying that we don't have that many good hostels, especially in London, I don't think. Is that not something that you thought about, being in your own country, and like how you said, you want people to experience the UK in a good way? So is that not the perfect place to do it?
Yeah, it was. It is potentially still an option. In order to kind of, without being super boring about it, in order to get the visa and stuff that I need, I might actually have to do it in the UK first to prove my ability to run a business before continuing to another country. That's possibly something I have to do. So I have actually thought very seriously about doing it in the UK. And I had decided on Manchester purely to cut it short, just a massive gap in the market. They've got 3 hostels there, really poorly reviewed. And I think there's a gap to do something in Manchester. And I would love to do that. I would love to bring that to somewhere in the UK. Exactly, like I said earlier, I'm really passionate about this country and how awesome it is. And I want to host people and show them. But I just can't live in England. It's too cold. It's too grey. In the summer, it's fantastic. And if it was like it is in June, July, August, year round, no worries. But it is just a struggle for me every winter.
Okay, well, I've just had a thought. Do you have any ideas for, like, names of your hostel?
I do, actually. Oh, okay. I just spent the day a couple of weeks ago thinking on it. And I'm almost certain I want to call it the Renegade or
Ooh,
Renegade.
For
anyone
like that
doesn't really know the definition of Renegade, it's traditionally to do with being more like an outlaw, someone that's turned against their cause. But more so it's used to being someone that does things in a different way, someone that goes against social norms. For me, the way that I travel, just traveling actually and backpacking, I think is against the social norms. Oh, I'm going to get a mortgage and get married and settle down and live, you know, and go on package holidays and stuff, which is absolutely fine. But the less well-traveled path, the more outside of your box way of doing it is more of your backpacking, your couch surfing, your all these kind of different things, staying in hostels, blah, 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 blah. That's more of a renegade travel style for me. Meeting locals, bit more of a renegade way to do things. And so that's that kind of resonated with me, that the word renegade.
Yeah, no, I love that. That's really good. It reminds me of, do you watch The Apprentice?
Yes, love The
Apprentice. I think one of their team names was something like that at one year. I think one of the girls suggested it, but yeah, it reminded me of that.
It does sound like a like an apprentice team name. Really cool. Okay, let's just wrap up now by, I think people know what our favorite's going to be, but we spoke about four different types of accommodation, so hotels, hostels, couch surfing, and Airbnb. Catherine, in order from best to worst, what's your favorite and what's your worst?
Well, I can't comment on couch surfing, can I?
Well, that's true. Yeah.
True.
So it's going to obviously be hostels, Airbnb and hotels. But I would hope one day it'll be hostels, always, couch surfing, Airbnb and hotels.
Nice. I would say mine is couch surfing, Airbnb, hostels. Oh, wait. Hostels and Airbnb are so equal for me. I can't do it.
You haven't stayed at the Renegade yet, have you?
So. Oh, I mean, that's just the dream. I'm going to stay at the Renegade and then I'm going to be like, hostels are the best. And then, yeah, hotels are worse for me.
Yeah, well, mine is obviously couch surfing, then definitely hostels second, Airbnb then quite a long way third, and then finally hotels. I just think they're boring. But again, they serve a purpose.
Wait a minute. I'm gonna change and say exactly the same as what you just said. I don't know why I just said that. What weirdo. Anyway, so yeah, that was our accommodation episode. Thank you so much for making your way to come down and see us.
My total pleasure.
And you really have been our hostel expert, so well done.
Yeah, no, you've been brilliant. Yeah, thank you so much. Please feel free to get in touch with the show. You can do that by checking out our website, www.whatthefotravelpodcast.com. From that, you can find all of our social media channels. We're on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Our email address is whatthefotravelpodcast@gmail.com.